Right, that was Love for the Sake of Love by Claude Ribéry, and I'm finishing off Before Grievances of the Scots starts, and the song is called Diamond Head by The Ventures, on the Shakespeare Show.
Hello and welcome to Grievances of Scott. I am Alistair Melling. You are listening to 101.9 FM CITR in Vancouver. Now, I've had to cut my show a little short today because I am moving out as of tomorrow. And so, very, very busy times. And so, I've only been out and managed to put together maybe half an hour's bit of material. But I want to say Grievances of a Scot, which is the show, this current show, obviously, is a show that's only been running for 7 weeks now. But due to the fact that obviously I'm an exchange student here until May, this last half an hour, this will be my last half an hour, should be an hour, but half an hour, to pollute CITR's airwaves with my strange tones and obnoxious opinions before running home, returning to the home country with all of my grievances. Most likely to start propagating them again once I'm there to once more unwilling and disinterested ears. However, fear not, as I have this last half an hour, not only to piss you, but Vancouver and Canada off with my extensive objections, outrages, sorrows, my experiences here in Vancouver over the year. So there will be some positive ones, I'll be sure to mention them, but it's mainly going to be my grievances, as this is the name of the, being true to the name of the show. They will be partly serious, hopefully amusing, and potentially offensive, as I attempt to overgeneralize Canada and its people from my limited observations within BC. So, let's start off with the first thing that's annoyed me with Mike, because I've been here since September. And so, I've seen a fair amount, but probably not as much as, obviously, people who are living here. But my first thing that I noticed here in Vancouver was, unfortunately, the food. So I knew Canada's food was going to be a little bit more processed and treated than the European food, owing to its the economic and geographical proximity to the US. But I was not expecting it to be able to leave an apple out for 2 months and actually see some sort of rejuvenation in the skin shininess. While it rotted on the while it's rotted on its tasted inside, seems like they may have tried this technology with the likes of Barry Manilow or Joan Rivers. The same thing goes for these super mutant tomatoes that are sold here. They sit there deceiving you of their ripeness, only to the point where you start cutting them and they reveal their true nature of some kind of squeezy tube that the moment you try and get a hold of it slips out of your hands. My second grievance of food, your dairy products. They are, I believe Canada has got a complete, there's a complete monopoly on the dairy products here. Well, not complete monopoly, but there's a lot of subsidizing that goes on from the dairy farms that's to stop, to put tariffs up for competition coming in. And it leads you to guys to have something along the lines of, I think it's about 50% more, so 150% the price of stuff that we would pay, maybe even more. But with the cheese tastes like you've got, okay, fine, you've got mozzarella, you've got cheddar, which isn't, it's not cheddar. You've got all these bunch of other cheeses, and they essentially taste the same. You've given them different names, but they essentially taste the same. I was actually pleased at one point when I had some cheese in my fridge, and it actually, after I think 2 weeks, started to show a little bit of mold. I was pleased because I actually confirmed that it was cheese that I had bought and not modified edible plastic. Seriously, big problem with your cheese. Also, just in general, the prices of even meat as well. I've become an involuntary vegetarian owing to the fact that it has destroyed my budget trying to buy meat here. But anyway, so I'm going to move on. Then there's a second thing that's exceptionally high. And it comes from your taxes and the fact that there is very little competition in this area, as BC liquor stores control pretty much all the... They're the ones who have the non-taxed... Oh, you've got sort of the private systems, but it's a complete monopoly by BC liquor stores. Somebody making clearly a lot of money out of that themselves. But, I mean, the whole idea of... If you go to these countries, if you can compare it to... I can compare it to Brazil, for example, where alcohol is dead cheap. The alcohol rate and the amount of alcohol that they consume. When I was there, I consumed very, very little. You could buy a liter of 51% alcohol, which is called 51, which means 51, for around about the price of $3.5. That's a liter of 51% for $3-$4. $4 maximum. Maybe the exchange rate's gone down right now. And what this leads to do is What this leads is that I think is... Maybe you've got this, there seems to be this culture, obviously, of binge drinking here in Canada. And it's present, definitely, in my home country of the UK or Scotland. Well, same thing. Well, no, maybe not in the future. 18th of September, there's going to be a referendum, which I've discussed previously on the show. But in my home country, there's a big problem of drinking. And it's because we have these very, very strict laws. And I also want to say that these things I'm complaining about Canada, they're not... singular to Canada. They're not unique. So Canada should not take any offense particularly of this. But the problem is with the prices of liquor, I think it leads people to binge drink. Also the fact that the clubs here, because they close so early and the amount of time that you've got to go and get there, an entire sort of system encourages binge drinking. Also, another grievance is the fact that bribery goes on in broad daylight, not broad daylight, actually under the cover of night, but there are many people present for people to get into the clubs. You see all of these rich... there's a certain ethnic group that seems to have a lot of money, and they turn up in front of the bouncers, and they pay them $20, and there's just a whole bunch of them that get to skip the queue or skip the line or cut the line. And this is completely, it's clear bribery, and it's happening in front of so many people, and everyone just seems to be okay with it. Pretty disgusting. Anyway, I shall move on. The one I want to move on is basically general customs within Canada. You have, what is this? You have old hag Lizzie, Elizabeth II, on your money, my goodness. It's bad enough that we still have her ugly mug on our money. But Canadians, I thought you were better than this. It's bad enough also that about 40-50% of BC, the population of BC, which is about 4.5 million, I believe, consider their ethnicity to be from those relevant countries of Scotland, England, Northern Ireland, and Wales. If you insist on continuing to have this ugly remnant of colonialism on your currency, at least try and make it interesting. let's say, like old hag Lizzie, you could make it interesting, like, what do you call it, you can add old hags, I like to call her old hag Lizzie, her face with the addition of sideburns, maybe a bull ring nose, and the reverse Hitler's moustache, that would be particularly interesting. Better still, why not you put her gormless son Charles with his arms around both Camilla Parker Bowles and Diana Spencer whilst kissing a man, something Canadians could probably relate better to. The second thing that I want to do, there's a particular amount of apathy that goes upon this, and the fact that nobody really complains about this. Vancouver is miles away from the UK. It's got nothing to do with this. There's no essence of British, apart from the name British Columbia, but there's no essence of Britishness here. So it seems ludicrous that you would still have monarch as your head of state. As I said, ugly remnant of colonialism. But the thing is, very few people seem to complain about this, and it's something that I've had a lot of, I've talked about a lot with my fellow exchange students. And it's a bit, it's particularly, we wanted to call it a particularly apathetic place. UBC, actually, rather than BC, a particularly apathetic place. For example, there's a recent article in UBC by Arno Rosenfield called Tar Sands and the Patriarchy Are Irrelevant, calling for a new campus activism. A little excerpt of the first paragraph of it, which I particularly I found particularly transcendent with my views. It says, a central aspect of the problem is the increasing the central aspect of the problem of this is the increasing tendency amongst all of us to focus intensely on personal concerns. For a generation that has grown up on the internet, this isn't shocking. After all, our many screens promise interconnectivity, not unity, and most of us are happy to connect to other like-minded individuals and media. UBC then becomes not only not our community, but a degree mill of sorts. I do agree very much with. Our university is where we go to boost our employment prospects and maybe get an education. Outside of class, we'll concern ourselves with our social lives and perhaps Reddit threads, Instagramming our lives, and online activism, or, as it's known, slacktivism. And I definitely agree with this to a great degree. The only general outrage that I've seen, or not outrage, but strong emotions that I've received from people by having serious conversations with people who are from Vancouver and go to UBC, is about this sort of, it's about the patriarchy and LGBT queer rights and this language. And although this is admirable that UBC attempts to solve many of these issues, I mean, Canada is miles ahead of, or I can't compare to the East, Ontario and Quebec, but at least here, you guys are miles ahead in terms of accepting gays, queers, being more aware of the oppression of women, miles ahead. But I do feel that this is a particularly it's a wealthy class concern, or people with money. It's the things that they care about by themselves. It's a bit like obviously feminism's moved a lot now, but especially during the second wave feminism, a lot of women were fighting, actually first and second wave, a lot of women were fighting for the rights of because they saw the wealth that their husbands had, or the men around them, and they wanted a crack in at that. They wanted a piece of it, and didn't necessarily fight up for other dominions' rights. Now it's getting a little better, I see, but it's not, there's this sort of class looking, what would you call it? It's more like the wealthy looking out for the wealthy mentality. And this is no more, there was this showing that when there was six to eight sexual assaults last semester, where the entire campus went crazy over something that happens in the hundreds each night, merely 20 minutes away in downtown Vancouver. I do understand that it's a problem if you're having sexual assaults on campus, but it's happening so much just down the road, and there is obviously activism about that, but the scale of the response between obviously what's going on downtown and then something that's not necessarily, well, it's obviously a fraction of what's occurring every single night in downtown Vancouver. Away from some of the controversy, I want to also talk about the people. Obviously, the people are extremely nice here. Always saying thank you and sorry, but sometimes it goes a little fast. You know, it isn't really necessary to say sorry the moment you bump into a door. I've seen people do this where they've walked in, they bumped it, and they instinctively turn around, sorry, and there's nobody there, just a swinging door. Very offended swinging door, mind you, at that. Obviously, there's the joke in Canada of a guy holds the door open for five people, receives eight thank yous. There's many other cases within that. But there's also I wanted to talk about this thing called it's called pass. Something I came up with and I explained it on the show 2 weeks ago. Something called passive positivism, and I think here Canada could be considered particularly guilty of this, or just the people I've met in UBC. It's this sort of, yeah, man, that's awesome, da, 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 sort of thing for example, you give an opinion, or you say you're going this place, or you say you disagree with that. Here, generally, I found that people have been very sort of non-confrontational and don't want to sort of state forward their opinions, if they are even capable of doing so. Yeah, man, that's awesome, like, you know, do this, na-na-na-na-na. It's probably an awful accent, and I apologize for that, and at least you have some grievances against me. But it makes it more fair, but it is something true that you have this, and the reason why I call it passive positivism is because there's this lack of emotion in it. You're giving off a sort of positive message, but there's no real, what would you call it, there's no real emotion hidden behind that. And for example, I can give you a story. And before I actually move on to this exact point, the frats. I went to unwittingly went to a frat party at the beginning because we were invited by some guy, and all the exchange students went. And we were downstairs, and we wanted to go back and get some. I was in a dress, so I didn't have any pockets. This is how we roll in the UK, always in dress. Men love to get in dresses in the UK, and I am no different. So I was in a dress, so I had no pockets, and I didn't have any money to buy any alcohol once we were there, and I'd unfortunately gone a bit too sober to the frat party. And when I say a bit too sober, I mean not totally drunk, so that I can't remember the entire event, which I hope to do. So some guy passed by and he's like, "Why are you doing? What are you moving? Just move on, because it was very, very crowded in the corridors. And so we said, "Well, we don't know. We're unaware if you have this in and out system." And he was like, "No, we don't. Would it be possible? We want to say for us to go and get some money from home. We live 5 minutes away. We're in Fairview, and they're 5 minutes away. Maybe we can go get that and then come back. Would that be okay?" Yeah, sure, man. And this passive positivism, what I'm talking about. Then he takes us upstairs, speaks to his friend, who's at the door, and says, "Can you get these guys in? It's okay. They're just coming back. They're just going to get some money." And the guy's like, yeah, sure. And like, "You said that a bit too quickly." So I turned to the guy like, "You're definitely going to remember us. Remember our faces? Our names are Alistair and Jesus, must have been a Mexican friend. Jesus, just remember Jesus. The name Jesus, it should not easily slip your mind." "Okay, cool. Yeah, sure. Passive positivism. We then go away, come back maybe 5-10 minutes later, speak to the exact same guy. He's like, "Hey, man, do you remember us from before? Is it okay if we get in?" "No, I don't remember you." "What? You said you would let us in. Alistair, Jesus, remember this guy, Jesus?" "No, man, I didn't make any promises, da 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 da." And the guy completely blanked us. They completely blanked us. It will lead me onto the frats. This leads me onto the frats, and I think there it is a horrible system. Honestly, the fraternities, it's got this exclusivity to it. I'll give you a remnant of what this exclusivity, or how I experienced this exclusivity. Not personally. I was with my friend. He was a little bit too young. This was, when would it have been? This would have been block party. So that was a complete mess there. And we went, and I met some friends who weren't part of frats, but they had friends there, and they were playing beer pong, obviously, because that's what you do in a fraternity. Pretty much all you do. No, I'm joking. I won't be too cruel. But they were playing, And there was this other girl who I didn't know, and my friend, who was a bit drunk, went over, started playing with her, wasn't being particularly polite or talkative to her, but she was doing the same thing, so they're both equally guilty. My friend then grabs the ball. She keeps giving him dirty looks, and then takes the ball from her. This has been for about 5 minutes into play, and plays the ball. She turns around and says, "F off, you're not even a frat boy." That was the first thing that came to her mind. But not, the problem was, wasn't because she thought he was hitting on him. And that's another thing, but I'll get onto it in a little bit. It wasn't because the guy was being rude or whatever. Her main grievance, which is the key word today, her main grievance was that he wasn't from a frat. Because it was obvious because he didn't have the matching t-shirts that everyone seems to have. And it's also the problem is, like, you can't really expect much good to come from a point where you put a bunch of young men in a house with a lot of their parents, with a lot of money made by mummy and daddy, or mainly daddy, and you put them in a flat, and then you give them alcohol, and then the way you introduce them to women is by getting the other group. That obviously they don't live. I think there's one place where they can live together, here in UBC. Your listeners should know better than I do. And then introduce them sort of every week, second week when they go out, and that's the only sort of meeting of guy meets girl. It's a completely unnatural, unhealthy system to have guys purely living together and not actually working out how they can live with girls. I think it's pretty disgusting. And then to the point where whenever a guy approaches the girl, because she thought my friend was hitting on her, you automatically assume that if a guy approaches you who you don't know, they are going to hit on you. It's true that the frats have a lot of confidence and they're very friendly, a bit of passive positivism within them all, but they all are very, very friendly, good to talk to, but it's very difficult to get a proper conversation from them, and it's even more difficult to get it from a sorority girl. Sorry, people, this is what my experiences are, and I'm not playing on the stereotype because we don't have fraternities, so I didn't know anything about them before. Anyway, we shall finally move on, and I want to talk also about this, the general, I'm going to go back to apathy just briefly, and anecdotally talk a little bit about a story of what this apathy is within UBC. I have a friend who was, she was under Vancouver Bridge, not Vancouver, yes, Vancouver Bridge, Granville Bridge, the one on under, she was on Granville Island, and she was sitting there in a cafe, and all of a sudden she hears a crash, that was probably not the best, but microphone makes it very difficult to reproduce. And she looked outside, and on the car there was a man who had quite recently committed suicide by jumping from the bridge. She's very obviously traumatized by seeing a man kill himself in front of her. She goes away, she goes and tries, it's in a parking lot. She goes away, she goes, gets about half an hour, no, she waits a little bit, police arrive. She goes away, buys some flowers, comes back around about 20 minutes, half an hour later, and everything's gone. All signs of possible death have disappeared. And so there are actually a lot of people committing suicide each day in Vancouver. I couldn't find the exact numbers, but I had a friend who does she has Crisis Line. She was on the radio 6-7 weeks ago. And she spoke about a lot of people. It's a serious problem. And it's the other thing that I want to talk about. I specifically spoke about homelessness with her. And the mental illness rate here in Canada is quite staggering. And especially amongst, obviously, homeless people. And I was speaking with some of my friends, and we have some sort of theory as to why this is. And, well, drugs here in general, as I mentioned, alcohol is incredibly high. When you're in the UK, in anywhere in Europe, what these drug addicts, what the people who are homeless, what they, lifeline, their staple drug is alcohol because it's cheap, and it just ends up them sort of being a bit like slurred and shouting at people, but they're generally harmless, and we haven't actually got nearly as many homeless people as in Canada seems to have. But I think it's because there's one of the maybe it's not the only reason. I'm no sociologist, but maybe one of the reasons, main reason that these people are particularly prone to mental health issues is, well, there's a lot of sexual abuse going on, and also the drugs that they're using. I think generally, crack cocaine, bath salts, and other drugs like that are a lot cheaper here, especially relatively to, well, cheaper first of all outright, and also relatively to alcohol, which we don't have necessarily. Also, now I've got to go onto a bit more of a controversy. Is the talking point with you get a lot with the poor is about well, the natives. I believe Canada spends, the Canadian government spends about $10 billion a year on funding on various welfare forms for natives. Still, I think about 2/3 of the, no, maybe was it a third of the reservations. I'm gonna go with reservations. I won't think. Yeah, I think that's the right word. Have no running water. Have no proper water. And the real thing, coming as an outsider, and obviously, and won't understand the entire issue and all the history that's gone before with the schools for the natives. But the problem does seem that Canada is treating, by giving them so much welfare, the natives, it's making them it's marking them as an underclass, a dependent class on welfare, and it's not. Obviously, integration is a bit of a controversial word, but in this case, I think some ways what would incentivize them to sort of integrate better into society. I mean, they don't even need to have to. It's up to them. But government should get out, allow them to do their own thing, without. It's very, very difficult. And I think that this was even a subject that was discussed by your prime minister in 1969. I can't remember his name. Jean. He was a French guy, or Quebecois guy. Moving, cutting away all this stuff. And maybe have less of this two-tier system of the natives maybe feeling entitled because, obviously, of their screwed up history by the Canadian government and feeling entitled to this, to a lot of the welfare, but it's also pisses off the poor whites who, even more actually all not whites, sorry, the rest of the population who, especially the poorer part of that population, who see a lot of the money that they would have liked going disproportionately to another group, and it creates resentment between the two groups, who one wants more and one thinks that this is particularly apparent. So, from an outsider's perspective, I disagree with this two-tier system. I probably shouldn't say anything more because obviously it's a touchy subject.